Growing up, it was so many family secrets that now I'm starting to uncover, but it makes sense of, oh, I grabbed this characteristic from this person. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm a little bit like that person.
My name's Johnny Reinhardt, and I've lived in Southwest Michigan most of my life. It's such a wonderful community full of so many great things, but the best part is the people, families, history, and especially the stories that make it great. And with every story, you have to start somewhere. This is Start From the Beginning. Stories from Southwest Michigan. Welcome to episode 4 of Start From the Beginning, Stories from Southwest Michigan. Today I'll be talking with RJ Williams, and RJ is a good friend of mine, somebody that I admire because she's kind of like me. She loves uncovering the stories from people in her family, people in her community, and just getting to know the history of where we are today. So that's just some of the things that we'll talk about, but first, let's start from the beginning. RJ, I'm so glad that you're taking some time out of your busy life to chat with me today, because you do a lot of things in our community, don't you?
I do a lot. Sometimes I look like I don't think I have enough time in the day, but somehow it gets done.
Absolutely. And, you know, we first met a few years back. You are an accomplished author. You've got a book series that you've been working on, and you just you keep yourself very busy. So let's start from the beginning, though. You born and raised right here in Southwest Michigan, and you're one of those people that you care about the community. You love writing stories. You just got a lot of stories to tell, right?
Absolutely. Being from a small town and moving away and seeing and living in a larger city such as Dallas and Houston, I was more appreciative of my hometown, like all the stories that I had heard growing up. And I would tell it to my friends that were in the larger city. It was like, man, I want to come visit this place. And I'm like, okay. All right. Well, whenever I go back home, you can come. So it's always an open invitation, because I feel like it's really a gem, or it's really a privilege, I think, in a lot of ways, to be from Benn Harbor, Michigan.
Yeah. And when you go to different areas, you know, I've been on vacation somewhere. I go somewhere for across the country, and they're like, oh, where are you from? And I'm like, oh, even if I say St. Joe, they're like, where's that? And then if I say Benton Harbor, they're like, oh, yeah, we know Benton Harbor. Yeah. That's like, you know, everything, you know, that they have to offer. And our community is just so great. And like you said, there's so many gems, not just the beautiful beaches and the lighthouse and the stuff like that and the cool places you can vacation. There's gems in the people and the stories, and there's just so much history. And your book, The Adventures of Alley Cats and the Missing President, that was the first time that you and I met. Yeah. You had that book. What made you get into something like that? And do you have a love for history?
Love history. Even my t-shirt says Black History Month all year long. I grew up with a grandfather that was very involved in politics and community and being a justice of the peace and a notary public even back then in the 40s and 50s. I always heard stories. Yeah. That's all that we did. And it was my sister and I joke about, one of our jobs, like my job, was to read the obituary section to him every night.
Really?
And I found just great joy in that, because I learned a little piece of someone's story. And if he knew them, he would give me a little bit more. So that's really how I fell in love with storytelling.
So what did you like? What was accomplished by reading the obituaries? what? I mean, he probably, like you said, it was one of those, well, let me hear about maybe somebody that I may know, because many grandparents, I know me growing up, my parents as well as my grandparents, you couldn't go anywhere without them knowing someone.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Not just your hometown, but we'd go on vacation and I thought, all right, there's no way that anybody in this town, in whether it was Northern Michigan or somewhere else, that there's no way that somebody knows you. And sure enough, they said, oh, hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
Good to see you again.
Yeah. I would joke about my dad and my granddad. Everyone was their friend. Yeah. Everyone. They made friends with everyone. But going back to the obituaries, it was more of reading for comprehension. Like, sure. He was real big on literacy. And it was a lot of people. He was up in age, and it was a lot of people around him that were dying. But I was more intrigued with if someone's obituary section was really small, like, or if it was just a death notice.
Sure.
I wanted to know more. Why didn't someone write more about them? Their life meant more to somebody than this. So that's when I really was like, okay, I want to write more stories that reflects the dash.
So did you ever fill in the blanks and maybe make up a story based off of the pictures that you saw, or maybe their name or something like that? Because I feel like you got a lot of creativity, and that would be a fun activity to do that. But like you said, that there's more to the story, and you can tell a lot of the story just by looking at someone's photo.
Mm-hmm. So I would read the stories to my granddad. He would give me his version of them, like the interaction that he had with the person. Yep. And then I would go tell it to my grandmother to kind of cross-reference. So she would try to guess if part of it was true or part of it was a fib, because we didn't say lie. So, that's how she was my sounding board.
That's awesome. Yeah, that is true. When it comes to obituaries, those are just like the cliff notes, or someone else is writing it, and or maybe some people write their own obituary and that's what they want their story to be. But, you know, other people's reactions or interactions with those people, they're probably going to be slightly different, I'm sure. So it is good to learn that. But that's interesting to dive into the obituaries and learn all that. But that, like you said, it got those creative things in your brain going and all the juices flowing with that. So where'd you go from there? When you were a little kid reading the obituaries to your grandparents, you had that. You had stories. There's a lot of stories that you and your grandparents probably told. So you were just born to be a storyteller.
I guess I was. And I honestly would say that storytelling saved my life, because I had some bullying situations when I was in elementary school, and coming from a family that I would say is pretty funny. Mm-hmm. I found ways to tell those stories and a funny way to keep people from bothering me.
Yeah.
And from then on, I was like, man, stories actually work. Like, if you can get someone to laugh or to get someone to engage in the story that you're telling, even if it's not all the way the truth.
Right.
I've got something here.
Yeah. So you have siblings?
I do. I'm the youngest of three.
I'm the youngest too. And from conversations with people, that's like the same childhood I had, is that as the youngest, you have your moments. Like, all your other older siblings, they're doing what they do, and they've kind of found their path and what they're doing. But as the youngest, you always have those little moments. You don't have a lot of time, but you also have that. You pick your moments of when you can either insert a joke or take the stage and tell a story. And that's pretty much what I did growing up too.
Yeah.
So then you're growing up, and so you said you got bullied a little bit. So the stories, did they help you take the bully? And like, almost that was your weapon when you're getting bullied. That was your weapon against them.
Absolutely. But I would try out the joke or the stories first with my best friend. And I'm like, if I can get her to laugh.
Yep.
I'm good. So it was more of distracting them from like asking for my or demanding lunch or lunch money or anything like that. It was turning that into a story.
Yeah. And then so is that sort of what inspired your book with The Missing Presidents? Because it's a children's book following kids that are what, history sleuths. So much like probably what you were growing up, you loved history and doing that. So what is that story all about?
So and the main character is actually named after my aunt. And as I started to research a little bit more, it is a family name. So I said, I want to get it. I didn't really see myself naming a child Katie. So I said, well, I'm going to make a character Katie. So she's more of the archivist. So we have an archivist, a librarian, and a historian. And even working in the archives, I feel like that was like the magic or the dream team of any story, of any archives, of any library. You need those three people there. And they're just actually just going out into the world and telling these stories that, or telling the part of the story that history just like, oh no, that shouldn't be included in the history books. But as far as me working there, I was able to tell those different stories, because that story actually was from an internship at the Museum of the Confederacy, which is now, I believe, the American Museum of Civil War in Richmond, Virginia. So it was really bringing awareness to the other side of the story and engaging kids at the same time.
Yeah, I always wonder that with like with history classes that you took that you take in elementary school or high school. It's like, what's the other side of the story with all of this, whether it be, you know, a war with a different country or like Civil War with North and South? It's like a lot of times you feel like you only get the one side of the story of a lot of this and that history. So it's that it's ran through that filter of everything. So your mind can sort of go in many different directions as far as that goes, but that's pretty interesting. So you worked in at a library?
Yeah, it was the library inside of the museum. I've worked quite a few places. But that one was for 3 summers, and then it was another summer or another semester I worked at the historic Stagville Plantation, which was the largest plantation in Durham, North Carolina. So I was an intern and a docent. So I was given the tours because it's that the grounds is still standing. It's been through hurricanes. It's been the tornadoes. And most of the all the dwellings were built by the enslaved population. Mm-hmm. And it's still standing with no blueprint.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so you were doing all this traveling all around, and then you came back to the Benton Harbor area. Do you still like to travel and visit these historical places?
Yes. Yes. I have to go at least, even with COVID, before COVID, I did 2 trips, one to California and one to Alabama. And those were both historical tours for me. And it was also visiting family at the same time. So I didn't feel too much of an itch.
Yeah.
Because I got so much done in January. But now it's like, I need to get back out there. I need to be on some historic ground. And I need to collect some more stories to tell. So,
yeah.
Maybe this summer. Maybe.
Yeah, that sounds great. And so the books that you've written, they're part of a series. So are you working on another book for that series?
I am. My main goal right now is I finished a master's degree in 2014, but had no idea that I was working on 2 master's degrees at the same time, because I still wanted to be involved in history and I loved library science. So I'm finishing that up next month. So that's my main goal right now. And then it's like, oh, it's time for book 2. Like, I've already had it. I basically just needs to be illustrated because it's already written.
Yeah. So you don't do the illustrations. You have somebody that comes and helps you. Man, yes. I wish I could do that, because there's so many stories that I'm like, this would be a great children's book or something like that. It's just the finding the illustrator. But the illustrations in your book are fantastic. And that's one the I'm sure you wish that you could do that, because then that would make your life easier and your books. You'd be able to write tons of books that way.
Right. You are right.
So so you're doing that. That's one of the things you have working on that you have in the plethora of stuff that you do. Have you learned about a lot of the history of our community through your knowledge that you already have of being able to sort of find all of that history? Are you finding more now in our community?
Yeah. So even before COVID, I had a conversation with, I call her Queen Mamie. She's one of the county commissioners. And I told her, I said, I I'm around elders all the time. I love mm-hmm. to spend the weekends with like my uncle or my mom and get the stories of them growing up. Like, what was it like growing up? Because they're 70 plus and wisdom just upon wisdom and stories upon stories. So I told her that I wanted to start a series of collecting stories from the elders. And that's what I've started to do. And it's so much history. Mm-hmm. in those stories. And that's the charge on my life now, especially collecting those stories now more than ever.
Yeah. And I think that's one of those that even younger generations don't take advantage of as much, is that just sitting around with their parents or their grandparents and just saying, you know, asking a simple question of what was it like at this time? You know, like mm-hmm. if you were, what was it like growing up in the 60s in Benton Harbor or in any community that they grew up in? And then the stories just unfold after that, and it just keeps going, and you just wish that you hit record sometimes with a lot of those stories, because they're just ones that you want to remember forever.
So there's one story that I do want to share that I think is really, really cool. So I asked my mom, because I was looking at birth certificates and it said that she was born in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. I said, well, how the heck did you get to Michigan? Like, tell me how that happened. And she said that after my great grandmother died, my grandmother got married to my granddad, and they soon separated, and her and my grandmother came to Michigan on the train. I said, oh, okay. Well, where was the train? I'm thinking St. Joe. Mm-hmm. And she said, no, the train station was right downtown, like right next to Mason Jar. There was a train depot right there. I'm like, what?
Wow.
There was a stop there?
There's still train tracks there.
Yeah.
And when you look at that, it does look like that area does look like a train depot, now that I think about it.
So I said, okay. And then she said, you'll never guess who picked us up.
Who was it?
I said, humor me. Sinbad's mom.
Oh, wow.
So his mom recently passed, I know, like in the last year or mm-hmm. two. And I shared that with him on Twitter. And he was just like, you just made my day.
Wow.
And I said, so that's, I never knew if we had a connection with him. Mm-hmm. I never knew that. Yeah. But she said, yeah, she said, my own mom didn't tell me that. She said, I ran into her at the store and she told me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many people that, you know, Sinbad, Ernie Hudson, the people that are from our community that, you know, they leave and go off and have their big stardom. But people don't realize that a lot of their family stays wherever they're from and they're in the community, and you'll bump into them and you're like, oh, yeah. Wait a minute. So those family connections, it's just so great. That's such a wonderful family too. The Atkins. Yeah. So you did that. And the telling the stories, that's just something you love doing. But also, you know, you do something, and I'm glad that you're on this podcast, because you also have your own podcast. And I want to talk about this, because you do one that is part of a series that you're doing, the Everyday People of the 49022. Just with the many things that you're doing, why did you think that this was a thing that needed to be done?
So this is actually, I think I was telling my brother this. It's like a love letter to our hometown. It's so many activities and events that were mm-hmm. going on during COVID, and just watching just how people were making things happen.
Yeah.
And that really needs to be highlighted, because we talked to people that did not have a elected title.
Mm-hmm.
So we were really talking to everyday people, and to hear those stories of people saying that, hey, I linked up with this person, we didn't wait for a corporation or organization to back us. We pulled our resources together and we made it happen, whether it was a softball game or a tire cleanup in their community. Just hearing those stories of, we got tired of waiting for any movement, so we did it ourselves. And when people catch up, then we will accept the help. But right now, this is an urgent issue for us.
Absolutely. And like I said before, is that you and I it's like kindred spirits, because of having that same love for stories and just talking to, you know, people you've just met, or, you know, there's people that I've met and talked to for many, many years that I learned so much more just by asking them something. Cause it's, again, like you said, you talk to those people and you learn about things, but usually it's about their specific job or something they do, or you hear somebody from those elective officials about something they do, but you don't always get to know more about them or their story. So, and so how long is this series going to be going for you with this?
So it's 10 episodes. So what, maybe at 10 o'clock, so about an hour ago, we premiered episode 5, and it was with Mrs. Bertha King. And that is an elder that is connected, that went above and beyond when she collected the stories. We were only tasked to collect 5 stories per person. She collected 10, and it's still going.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another another person. There's so many people in our community, like you said, the elders, that you know, people that have had so so accomplished lives, that they've done so much within our community that a lot of people don't even know about. It's that that boots on the ground kind of work that they do, the unsung heroes of our community. And I love that you're doing that. So that's one of the other things you do. Then you also have this other thing called the Final 48 Project that you do. So what is this about?
So it was actually an idea that was birthed when I decided to go back to grad school. Because I had 3 promises to my dad. It was to write a children's book and dedicate the first one to him. Mm-hmm. It was to finish grad school with high honors, and to start a documentary, just however that looked. And the process for me, my grief process or my grief journey, was actually listening to the stories of my friends who had suffered a similar loss. So that's how I birthed the Final 48 Project, because within the last 2 days with my dad, it was so much storytelling. It was a lot of promises made. It was really having peace with knowing that I have to let him go. He's suffering. Yeah. I have to let him go. So that's why I called it the Final 48 Project. So every story that I focus on, we talk about the life, your life, and how that person impacted your life. Mm-hmm. But what was those last 2 days? What was it like? What did you experience? And from all my research of all the stories I've done, everyone remembers those last 2 days, whether they were with them or not. I can remember where I was. I can remember the smell. I can remember what I was wearing. Mm-hmm. All of that. And I wanted to do that because it was it still is such a stigma in the Black community to talk about grief and trauma. So that I felt like, more than anything, I wanted to be surrounded by people that were going to be able to be transparent and tell those stories in order to help someone else and also help themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, because like you said, it's that final 48, they remember those moments, but a lot of that grief will stick with them way beyond that and for years to come. And so I think talking about some of that stuff is so important, and also telling those what was going through their minds, and helps them heal. But like you said, it's that many people, they put their guard up and they don't want to ever talk about some of that stuff. So I love that. So that's another thing that you got going on. What other promises did you make to your dad? You said, okay, write a children's book, documentary. Mm-hmm. What are some other things? What's next for you, RJ?
So the series, of course, doing a book number 2. And so a part of my thesis project for graduation is telling the story of understanding generational grief within my own family. And I was saying that growing up, it was so many family secrets that now I'm starting to uncover, but it makes sense of, oh, I grabbed this characteristic from this person. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm a little bit like that person. It was questions that I wish I would have asked, because now I have to go into the census records and newspapers.com and everything to piece the story together or talk to those elders that are willing to tell that story. But for them, they still have their guard up. Like that was so long ago, but that's still a traumatic experience for me. So basically turning that project into a documentary is like the goal.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. I feel like that's almost something that has kind of been lost over generations, is that, you know, with certain, you know, you always read in the history books about certain tribes, and they always have the elder, or whatever you want to call it, like the person that is to keep all of the stories and the memories of the history of that family or that group of people. And I feel like that's starting to go away, and it sucks, because there's a lot of stories that you may never learn. I mean, going back to obituaries, I remember reading my grandmother's obituary, and I learned so much just in those 3-4 paragraphs, stuff that I never learned about my family. Actually, I learned her first name, which I didn't ever. It was just Grandma, as Grandma Sue. And then I learned her name was Alvinia, or and I was like, wait, who's that? This is not the person. No, that's not the person I know. So yeah, I wish that there were more people tasked to do that within their family. Like it's a job. I mean, it's a job to keep all those memories and to hold on to that stuff. But I know it's something that you enjoy of collecting those stories, not just about your family, but also your community. And I love the stuff that you're doing. And like I said, we're kindred spirits, and I love the stories that you have to tell. And I know your stories are still yet to be written, not just children's books, but some of the things that you're doing, because you're still a young person and still doing big things every single day, spinning all the plates in the air. Yeah. But right now, what would you say is something that maybe people don't know about you?
I can be quite an introvert.
Yeah.
Like, people are like, now when I show up places, they're like, okay, the party can start.
Yep.
And I'm over it. You have no idea how much it took for me to get here. Like, I have to put on that. Okay.
Yep.
It's party time. So yeah, a lot of people don't know that I really like being by myself.
Yeah, I'm the same. Honestly, yeah. I'm the same. It's that I always call it the extroverted introvert.
Yeah, like, we're the ambiverts.
I think that's what it's called. I will gladly, you know, hang out and take the stage and do whatever, but that alone time, it's so exhausting sometimes to be out there. You're like, all right, I got one, give me one day of the party and the fun, and then give me 3 days of rest afterwards. Exactly. So if you were to title your autobiography as it's going right now, what's the working title for RJ's autobiography?
Let's see. Breaking Generational Curses.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. Yeah. That's good. Awesome. Well, I've learned so much about you, and I know there are more stories to tell. I'd love to even have you back on the podcast in the future, because I love all the stuff that you have going on. And like I said, we're kindred spirits, so it's like we're best friends forever, right?
I know. You're not getting rid of me. I'm definitely coming back.
Well, RJ, thank you so much for taking a little bit of time to talk with me today and tell me your stories. And I look forward to more of those to come.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Start From the Beginning, Stories from Southwest Michigan. Special thanks to our guests for telling their stories. And if you have a story to tell, I'd love to hear more. Please reach out to me by emailing letstalk@wsjm.com. That's letstalk@wsjm.com. You can listen to this podcast and all the episodes wherever you like to listen to podcasts, and be sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. This is a Midwest Family production. I'm Johnny Reinhart. Join me next time for another great story on Start From the Beginning, Stories from Southwest Michigan.